You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, the world's first legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. Hello and welcome to the Study Legal English podcast. I am your host, Louise, and today I'm very pleased to be joined by Scott Lowe. He is a solicitor. He has many years of experience in international commercial law firms, as well as experience in local government and charities. He specialises in planning and environmental law, and today we're going to be talking about legal careers. Scott will give some tips about working in these different areas and also talking about the pros and cons. So, hi Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
So before going into the questions, just tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today.
Okay, it's a big question. So I've been basically studying the law or practicing it for about, 20 years now, which is a bit terrifying. I did a law A-level, evidently I liked it. I am Chinese, there's only three careers open to Chinese people. You have a lawyer or a medic or an accountant. I don't fancy the other two, so I picked the other one. I studied law and philosophy at university, found that quite a good balance, graduated into the recession, travelled a bit, came back to the UK, and then just set about gaining the most experience I could to support my application to start my legal career. As part of it, I volunteered for a number of charities. I visited traveller camps to help with some discrimination law to improve for people in the site, volunteered in London for the promotion of the rights of Chinese people to gain access to justice. Also worked and volunteered in an environmental law charity to help people direct them towards legal advice. And all of that experience helped me have more to talk about when I made my applications to become a paralegal for the place that I eventually got a training contract with and qualified with as a lawyer. And then upon qualification, then went into a couple of commercial law firms, worked on lots of different big projects there, was trained in a very specific way, and then went back to local government because I wanted to learn. And that's where I am today.
Fantastic. Great. A wealth of experience in different positions. And for those listeners who are unaware of the charity sector in the UK, you might be thinking, what's all this about these charities? In my country, charities aren't that big. Well, in the UK, the charity sector is actually incredibly huge, quite unlike many other countries that I know of. And we've got charities that cover all types of sectors, from human rights to environmental issues, immigration, you name it, there's probably a charity in the UK that's dealing with it, and they play a very, very important role in access to justice, pushing for changes in the law, although they're not really legally supposed to be doing that, and they can be very interesting to work for. So we'll now go on into the questions. What are the pros and cons of working in an international law firm?
So one of the greatest advantages of working in a large commercial law firm is the availability of resources. These are big profit-making machines, and so your daily practice as a solicitor, you're more likely to have your own secretary. There'll be people to do the post for you, the online researching tools, and your case management system is likely to be quite superior in some ways. And obviously you'll get more money, which is always a big draw for people. And you may even have your own office, or at least a shared office space. That's not for everyone, but you know, it does happen in certain places. Another big advantage is that there's a certain element of prestige for working in these sorts of institutions. And to have names on your CV, like the big players, can be very helpful for you in your future career. Can carry a lot of weight when you're doing networking. You drop a name, people tend to go, oh, I'd actually recognize that law firm, rather than people saying, who are you? And that can be helpful. And another big pro is that because you're working for a larger law firm, there they tend to be able to secure work that small organizations couldn't. You've got the time, you've got the resources, you have the opportunity to work on some quite big, large-scale projects, depending upon your interests. So, for instance, I've done some work on nuclear power stations. I didn't know a great deal about them before then, but just having that ability to work on those sorts of projects can be very interesting. The cons, I'm sure most people are already aware and familiar with this, some of the hours can be long. Mm. The lifestyle can be quite demanding, and there can be unspoken expectations about what that would mean. And so there is a trick into when you go into these offices, you say, when is, you know, some people don't want you to desk sit, other places that'll definitely be the culture. So it's not only partner-led, but it's also departmental-led.
When you say desk sit, what do you mean?
So desk sitting is basically when people will go into the office and not do any chargeable work, but just sit there to be seen to be sitting there. Because if you go home before your supervising partner goes home, it doesn't look good. And so then you come into the old 80s sort of working practice. You've got suits on the back of chairs. You've got people sending emails at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., 11 p.m., 1 a.m. just to be seen to be doing them. Mm-hmm. So people go, oh, look at this guy. He must be working hard because he's sending emails at 1 a.m. rather than saying, why is this idiot sending emails at 1 a.m. because he's obviously not resting and he's not managing his workload very well.
Yeah.
But depending upon the organization, how quotation marks old school it is, that culture can still exist in certain places.
Yeah.
And it's helpful to be aware of that.
Is there sometimes when it could be relevant to send an email at 1 a.m. if, for example, the international law firm is dealing with clients in, say, China or America, where there's a big time difference between now and the UK, so it would make sense?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In international law firms, your clients are from all over the world. Sometimes you'll have handover between legal teams. So let's say once America goes to sleep, they pass it over to England. England works on it for the next 12 hours and then passes it back to America. So people do work in international shifts. And in those sorts of situations, especially in the larger commercial contracts, you're going to have that sort of time pressure. Something needs to happen by Wednesday GMT time 12, so they'll just throw all the resources they can at it. What I suppose I'm talking about sometimes is where people will just pretend to be busy, and you know, your numbers don't lie. You know, the life of a commercial lawyer is his chargeable hours. That's your lifeblood. It doesn't matter how long you're in the office for. You could be in the office in 8 hours, do all your chargeable units in that day. You could be in the office for 12 hours and do none.
So what are the other cons?
It tends to be the case that sometimes the office culture is sometimes not incredibly diverse.
Mm.
We're all lawyers, and you hang around with lawyers, you socialize with lawyers, and they're all of a certain stock or creed or outlook.
Mm.
And if you are slightly different because of your ethnicity, your nationality, because of your political views, because of who you are, that can be difficult for some.
Do you think that's particularly the case for, I don't know, say the Magic Circle law firms, where they recruit their trainees from Oxbridge candidates, or they take preference over that specific type of person?
Absolutely. There are certain environments you go in where if you haven't been to a red brick university, you're going to miss out on something because you're not going to understand the shared culture. And, you know, you may be a great lawyer. You may be great at talking to clients, but because you don't fit within that special society, that's going to play against you to some extent, especially if you've got future ambitions to become a partner of that law firm. You know, when you look at potential law firms, it would be helpful, I would say, is if your background is slightly different, to look at the partnership and say, how much diversity is there at the top?
That's a good idea. Because certainly what you're talking about, there is a stereotype of the legal profession in the UK of it being very elitist, a bit like a gentleman's club. Everyone's from Oxbridge and white, middle class. And, you know, you would hope that it's gradually changing, becoming more diverse. Nowadays, I don't know whether law firms have quotas, for example, for employing women or having an ethnically diverse team. Is that really the case?
I couldn't really say for all the majority of organisations, but yeah. I would be surprised if many of them would positively select to create diversity, because oftentimes it's going to be chargeable hours led. You're either a rainmaker or you're a great lawyer, or hopefully you're both. But you know, you could do both of those things, but because you don't have the right, they call it the chat, and in Oxford and Cambridge, that's all about how great your chat is, and how great your chat is depends upon if you went to a certain type of school, have a certain type of background.
Aha. Not something you can learn then.
No, that's difficult to learn. The chat is how you dress, your hobbies at the weekend, the sort of car you drive. And it's those shared cultural values that you've got with your peers, because a partnership only selects its own members from itself. So in terms of your internal networking, and that's, you know, that's really important.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know, can you really make an impression on the right people above and beyond just, you know, your professional ability? It's something that I'm sure is changing, but I would suggest it's helpful to have in the back of your mind always.
Yes, yeah. If you listeners can actually hear a big cheer in the background, it's because we're actually interviewing during the England match, and I suppose that England have just scored. England against Sweden, I believe.
Potentially.
You can tell that I'm not a big football fan. Okay, great. So any other cons, do you think, of big international law firms?
You also have to take into account your future prospects at the firm. Because you've come in as a new qualified, maybe 3 or 4 years, and after that, your path ahead of you is clear. If you want to stay inside that organisation, you're going to have to become a partner of some description. You've got 10 years to do that. You have to excel in terms of your technical ability. You should have to have a following. You have to bring your own client, and you have to impress the right people within the firm itself. You've got 10 years to do that, let's say. After that, you might be asked to leave, because it's cheaper, it's more effective for them to just continuously hire junior lawyers. So if you aren't in that position at 10 or 11 years, you've got to think about, what am I going to do? You could become a legal director, for instance, where you're in essence a very, very senior lawyer, but that may not also be the case. So if you are asked to leave, you should think about, what am I going to do then? Am I partner material? You may not know that until you come to a certain level in your career, but it's helpful to appreciate that type of career to some extent has a time limit on it. A lot of people are not going to be 30 years inside of one of these large commercial law firms and then just sit there and be happy. It's unlikely to occur.
Talking about partner material, are there some common traits, or do you think it differs from law firm to law firm?
There probably are some common traits. People tend to be competitive. They have to have the political nous, great technical lawyers, the ability to communicate with clients in using common sense language, to have a good sense of the economics of the firm, your billing, your chargeable hours, being able to manage a team. So not everyone is going to be good at managing. And that's a soft skill, and that's probably a failing of the profession as a whole, is that sometimes lawyers are not great managers. It's just not in your natural skill set. But all of these are just general traits. It does entirely depend upon the organization as a whole. There's a certain set of skills that I think becomes apparent once you start talking to people.
Yes. Okay, great. So let's move on and talk about working in the council, local government, charities. What are the pros and cons of these?
Right, so one of the pros is that you get a large breadth of work. It's a good place to go in as a junior lawyer, because you're learning all the time. You're never probably short on your chargeable hours, because you've always something to do. Councils are generally more diverse places as well, because you'll have people who have come in through the Silex route as well as the traditional form of LPC training contract qualifications route. Your work-life balance is likely to be better. So if you need to go home because your kids aren't well, you're unlikely to be criticized for it. There's also going to be a pension, which is changing currently. In terms of the cons, it's the case that workloads can be massive, so they can be overwhelming. You may not always have the opportunity to give every single file the due care and attention it requires. And how comfortable with that you are as a person, you know, that's entirely up to you. Managerial structures, they sometimes don't compare well to the private sector insofar as how clear your targets are, how your own workload should be balanced, the frequency of your team meetings, how well you know other people within the organization who are there to help and support you. And my advice to trainees working in local government is to say to them, take ownership of your own training. Mm. Know the law, know the guidance, know what you're about, because you know, other times people are not going to sit down with you and explain it to you in the same way that it might occur in a commercial firm. We spoke about one of the pros of there being lots of resources for commercial law firms, and the adverse is the same, basically, for local government. There is no resources. People question if you should send things first class or second class, as is correct, but in this situation, but there's continual pressure all the time on budgets, timescales, timing, and you know, your ability to give things the due care and attention that they need. And we spoke about this broadly, you know, the pro of there being a pension is also a con to some extent, especially when you're a younger lawyer, because people may not retire and there can be limited opportunities to progress your career past a certain stage.
What do you mean people might not retire?
Because uh-huh. The specific retirement ages are set quite strictly. Uh-huh. And for people to leave prior to that pension age means that they have quite a large hit against their pension. Mm. So I'm 55, my pension age is, let's say, 67. Mm-hmm. I've got 12 years ahead of me. Maybe some people are not that interested. In pushing the organization ahead and creating more work for themselves.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, these situations do exist.
Yes, so it's kind of local government is less competitive, which has these pros and cons, I suppose, like perhaps it could potentially be a nicer environment to work in, but then at the same time, you might get some people who are there who maybe shouldn't be there. And you mentioned that in the council as well, there's this huge caseload, but not enough time to work on these. And so sometimes the caseload doesn't get the attention that it needs. Whereas in the commercial law firms, you've still got a huge amount of work to do, but you're expected to work really, really long hours. Presumably in local government, you don't work quite so long hours.
I'll say the expectation is probably different. If you need to leave to go home, you know, it's not that sort of case where if you leave the office before 7 or 8 p.m., you're basically a pariah.
Mm-hmm.
What I've noticed, the difference is that commercial law firms will put a lot of resources and energy and effort into preparing you as a trainee solicitor to become the very best lawyer you can be. There's specific targets, there's reviews. There's a lot of support out there to try to turn you into the best lawyer that they possibly can, because you know, you're homegrown talent. The difference with local government is that sometimes you're there to do the work. You're there to do the churn. You may be supported, you may not be supported. It's a very different philosophy. They're not preparing you to become a great lawyer. If you become a great lawyer, like, then that's, you know, that's great and everyone's happy. But you may not have the resources to do that.
Yes.
And that's really one of the big differences. But then you may have more contact with senior members of staff as well in a local government. You may sit next to the right person who's able to help steer you along. But then again, you may not.
Yeah, it's a bit hit and miss.
A bit of a luck of the draw.
Yes. But as a trainee in a commercial law firm, are you given less responsibility, for example, because there's such a high caliber of work and such high expectations that you're sort of not allowed to do the work in a sense, and all of the work has to be watched over by the supervisors.
That definitely exists to some situation. I think commercial law firms tend to be more sensitive to the fact that if you say something wrong or send a wrong email or give the wrong message to a client, you know, you could do a bit of negligence.
Yes.
And for that reason, they will corral you, they will control you. Perhaps you won't send out any email that someone hasn't looked at. Perhaps there'll be red pen all over your emails. How comfortable you are with that process is up to you. But hopefully they're doing it for the reason that they just want you to become a better lawyer, rather than just wanting to be controlling.
And so what about charities? Because you've got a little bit of experience in the sort of NGO charity world. How does that differ from local government, big international law firms?
I suppose one of the biggest pros of working in the charity sector is that it's all about a cause. Now, if you believe in that cause, then it can be highly rewarding. You know, nothing's better than doing something that you believe in. You may believe really strongly in chargeable hours and in generating massive amounts of profit, which is great, but a lot of people don't, or that's perhaps not their first priority in life. So that's one of the biggest pros, can be very fulfilling. You're more or less likely to be outside of the billing culture, which exists both in local government and in commercial law firms. So you don't have to look at every single 6 minutes of your life as to whether or not you can justify your existence at that desk. Perhaps that's quite helpful. And, you know, because everyone there in a charity is presumably there about the cause, some of them will be nice, some of them won't be nice, but they'll be there for a reason. And that can make a lot of difference to the atmosphere of an organisation.
You're linked by the cause.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, people don't go working in charities to become millionaires. In terms of the cons, it's unlikely that positions in these organisations will become commonly available. There's not really that many out there who would be looking for lawyers, and, you know, these positions only come up every once in a while. Far fewer than as if you wanted to work in a law firm, a straight law firm. I suppose with that, they want you to come with a level of experience. You know, working inside a charity is basically you're working in-house. They don't want a junior. They want someone who knows what they're doing. There's nobody there to give you supervision. So you presumably want to be there once you're already a few years qualified. Typically speaking, the resources aren't always going to be as readily available. I suppose you may particularly feel that pinch if you're looking at some of the legal researching software. So you may not have Westlaw or Lexis or PLC and the like, which would be able to assist you on a day-to-day basis. I suppose it's not really a position where you're going to be earning millions as a partner in the future. So your future prospect is you may be the head of the team and the team may be you. So if you need to go on holiday, that can be a problem. Who are you going to pass your work on to? If there's something you're unsure about, who you're going to ask, it's helpful to also take that into consideration when you're looking ahead.
Great. That was a really good overview of some of the differences between these different legal areas. Have you got some concluding ideas, some overall tips about these different areas?
Yes, absolutely. I spoke to one of your other guests recently, Roger Margren. He gave me some good advice. And it was basically that you shouldn't put the cart before the horse. You should contemplate how you want your career to make you feel. Do you want to be fulfilled? Do you want to be in a situation where you're surrounded by people whose company you enjoy, but you're doing work that you care about? And then once you work out how you want your job to make you feel, then you can think about what it is that you do, rather than trying to make what you do tick all the boxes in terms of how you should feel. So it's good to have that view to the future. And when you're going through your career as a junior, there's some flexibility in terms of what you want to do when you're a few years qualified. that tends to dissipate around 4, maybe 5 years of qualification, because people are saying, if you want to change from employment into, let's say, residential property, why are you making that change? You'll have to persuade people as to what you're doing, why you're doing it, why you feel serious and why you care about it. And really, why didn't you make the right choice earlier? So it's difficult, because if you haven't had any experience of doing something, then how do you know what it is that you do want to do until it's too late? Mm. But that is essentially the life of a lawyer. To some extent. I believe strongly that the career of law, whoever's the most flexible is going to succeed. The profession has changed a great, great deal in the last 10, 20, 30 years. And the faster you are to adapt to those changes, I think the better off you're going to be. There's going to be a great deal of automation that's going to be introduced in the profession, especially in terms of drafting contracts and deeds or whatnot. And people who fight that, people who still want to charge an hour to do something that would take a machine 5 minutes to do, your opportunities are going to become more and more limited as time goes on. So embrace technology, because that isn't going to go away. So that's basically my recommendations and my thoughts to you all. We haven't discussed them as well, but there's also other options that are available in case you just like to be aware of what else is out there beyond the three that I've discussed today. There's other organizations such as statutory bodies that you could work for. There's the NHS, Natural England, Environment Agency, and they'll always have need for lawyers. CPS, I presume, as well.
That's the Crown Prosecution Service.
There's also positions available in central government, in the GLS, which is the Government Legal Service. So there's opportunities there. Presumably they'll be very busy prior to Brexit, and indeed after Brexit, depending on whatever happens.
Yep.
You've also got the opportunity to work in high street firms and the like. There's also a range of boutique specialist firms who will just focus on one legal area and become masters of those. There's also the judiciary. So if you fancy being a judge, you know, they're trying to positively recruit solicitors, I understand it, because they also have a massive lack of diversity. And there's also the opportunities to become in-house for a company. But as we've discussed, it's more likely that those opportunities will be available to those people who already have certain levels of experience. And that's about it.
Brilliant. Very good. I think a message that you can take away today as a listener is to really consider, what is it that you want in your career? If money is your priority, perhaps you might want to go into the very competitive environment of the international commercial law firm. If you're more concerned with being fulfilled, working towards a common cause, maybe you'd work for a charity, an NGO, or perhaps even local government if you're interested in the administration of public justice, public law. And then, of course, you can consider all those other options that Scott mentioned. So very, very interesting today, Scott. Thank you very much for filling us in on those areas.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Good. For those of you who are listening, if you want to find out more information about this episode, you can go to studylegalenglish.com. If you've got any comments, then, of course, please do get in touch. You can send me an email at info@studylegalenglish.com. And I'm not sure what's happening in the football match, if you can hear the cheers in the background.
There's a lot of flags.
There's a lot of flags, some people chanting in the street, not sure what's going on. Anyway, thank you for listening, and see you next time.